Good morning, everybody. Please take a seat. Buckle up, because we're going to have a bit of a roller coaster over the next few weeks. Be'ezrat Hashem. And I want to start on time now, because we need every minute that we can get to deal with Shemitah. First of all, let me thank our sponsor, the Shirim, for this year, 2021, sponsored anonymously and very kindly in the merit of an aliyah for the neshamas of Masasiyahu ben Yisrael, Aaron ben Menachem Leiv, and Eliana Bas Yaakov. Thank you for the sponsorship. And we begin today a series of five or six. Let's see how we feel about a sixth when we've been through five. Shirim on the issue of Shemitah. Haba Aleinu Latova, which is coming up in about 6 weeks from now. Rosh Hashanah is just over 6 weeks away. We need to get into the Shemitah field. This year we get an extra bonus because it's a leap year and Shemitah year. So we get 13 months of Shemitah. Back in the day they used to try and calculate the year in the Sanhedrin so that that would not happen. So that people would not have extra weeks of difficulty on the land. But there we have a fixed calendar. It does occasionally happen, and that we have next year. Now, I normally tell people that if you can understand Hilchot Shabbat, then Hilchot Shemitah is much easier than that. So if you can keep Shabbos, then you can keep Shemitah. On the other hand, no one would in their right mind would try and give a series on Hilchot Shabbos in five sessions. So even though Hilchot Shemitah is much more straightforward than Hilchot Shabbos, to try and communicate it in five sessions or six sessions is not really going to be possible. And therefore, what I'm not going to do is try and go through every detail of Hilchot Shemitah. I'm not a posek for anything, and certainly not for this. So if you have shilas, then please take them to your local Orthodox Shemitah Rabbonim. But I would like to consider a certain number of issues and try and bring in the major themes of Shemitah as we go through. Let me tell you how I've divided up the coming weeks, Be'ezrat Hashem. Today I want to talk about foundations, some basic principles of what Shemitah is, how Shemitah works, and the fundamentals of what is prohibited during the Shemitah year. Next week I want to take a much more historical perspective. I want to go back to the 1870s and trace the development of modern-day Shemitah in Israel through the different Shemitah years with Rav Kook and the Chazon Ish, etc., so we can understand a little bit the context behind why Shemitah is so fraught and sometimes controversial. That's next week. In the third week, I'd like to turn to the Heta Mechira. We will obviously look at that next week in the historical context, but I'd like to look at the Heta Mechira in terms of how it works, and therefore some of the foundations of Hilchot Shemitah I will not do today. We can't do everything in one day, but I will leave until week three when we go into the Heta Mechira, and we'll need those more specifically. In week four, I would like to look at the other quote-unquote Shemitah solutions that are have been developed over the last 100 years to enable us to engage with Shemitah in a way that keeps halakha but doesn't completely ruin the agricultural economy. We look at those other solutions like Otsa Beit Din, see what that really means, getting produce in from abroad, imported produce, non-Jews who produce produce in Israel, matzah menutak, the idea of producing greenhouse produce which is detached from the ground. We'll have to look at that. These are all what I might call other solutions, and that's in week four. And in week five, and possibly six, I'd like to turn more practically to how does Shemitah impact on the individual. I don't suspect anyone here is a major agriculturalist or farmer. Please correct me if I'm wrong. But there may be some people here who have a garden or who have plants around the house or on window boxes, etc. And therefore, Shemitah in a more practical sense for gardeners and also within the home. Because the one area which all of us will have to engage on some level, probably with Shemitah, is in our vegetables, in our fruit, in the house, and how that works. So I'd like to turn to the more practical issues in weeks five and six. So that's what I'm like projecting, and that'll be, I think, enough. Some of the issues of Shemitah which really only come up later in the year, like the question of biur, when do you have to destroy or make hefka produce which has kedushat shmita, shviit, we'll define all these terms. So that only kicks in later in the year. So let's leave some of the fun until later in the year, and we'll pick that up then. Also, this time next year, I'm thinking ahead, Be'ezrat Hashem, we'll be thinking of shmitat ksafim, release of loans and making a prosbul. There's no point talking about that now because it only really, according to most poskim anyway, becomes relevant in just under a year from now. So let's save up. It's Shemitah the whole year round, so we don't have to do everything now. Let's save up some of those topics till later. So, fine, if you look on page one, please, or maybe start with the back page. And I brought you a little appendix. I could have obviously done much more. There are a few books that I would recommend. The most recommended book I would suggest is Rav Rimon's book on Shemitah, which you can get in Hebrew or in English, depending on which you feel more comfortable with. The English book, as far as I can see, is as detailed as the Hebrew book. I've not compared every page. But this is definitely something which is worth buying and reading properly from beginning to end. I've used quite a lot of the structure of Rav Rimon in putting this year together, although there are other issues here too. I also want to bring to your attention something new for this Shemitah 2021 too, which is the Institute for Torah and the Land of Israel, HaTorah v'Haaretz, which in English their web address is Torahland.org, which of course is Torah and Aretz, although Torahland sounds like an amusement park, but I can promise you it's not. It is an extremely good website on issues to do with mitzvot atuliyot ba'aretz, generally trumot, masrot, orla, etc. But what they have, which most websites don't on this, is they have an extremely good English website. Rabbi Moshe Bloom, who has written many installments for the OU Torah Tidbits, he translated a 50, 60,000 word booklet, which has been available only in Hebrew up until now. He's translated that into English with all the sources, so that is an excellent, excellent resource. If you read all 40 of those articles together with Rav Rimon's book, then I can't promise you you'll get smicha, but you will definitely have a lot to say. And then there's a lot of brief, sort of short guides that I've brought you some references for at the bottom. Okay, let's get back into the shir, or let's start the shir on page one. So let's just make have a brief look at some of the halachic issues we need to talk about. There's halachic issues, there are halachic issues and hashgafic issues. Halachically, we need to talk about what the Torah prohibits and what the rabbis prohibit. We need to look at the issue of sefichim, which is a very specific rabbinic prohibition for Shemitah, things that grow by themselves or don't normally grow by themselves. We'll talk about that, but not that today. We'll talk about that when we talk about Heter Mechira and why there is a specific concern. That usually relates to vegetables rather than fruit. We'll talk a little bit about the commercial farming market and how they deal with Shemitah and domestic gardening and household needs. And we'll also need to look at, again, not today, which parts of Israel are subject to different concerns of Shemitah. Now, we did start looking at this. If you remember, we looked at Kedushas Haaretz about 6 or 7 weeks ago, and we started talking about Ole Bavel and Ole Mitzrayim, and this area was settled in the Second Temple, and this area in the First Temple, and this area never until recently. Those issues will come back, and that's one of the reasons I did it then, so we'll need to talk about that. We need to talk about what does Kedushat Shviit mean. We'll start with that today, how to manage a kitchen under Shemitah, buying produce during Shemitah, eating out with family, with friends, people who have different hechsherim and use different hechsherim. We need, as I said, to look at the solutions, quotes and quotes, Heter Mechira, Otze Basin, etc. Beer and Shemitah's Kesafim we'll leave to later in the year. Hashgafically, we also need, as we go along, to touch on what is influencing the halakha. For example, do we see Kedushat Shviit as an incredible opportunity to connect with sanctity of the land? Meaning we don't have today Korbanot. We don't have Tuma and Tahara. But Shemitah is almost like an echo of a past Mikdash Geula-oriented system which comes back now to our lives. Is that how, in which case, we want to embrace Shemitah? Or do we look at it as a big halakhic nightmare which we want to avoid? Meaning, here's a bunch of new problems that I don't normally have. Find me a way to just avoid the whole problem. Which of those do we look at? Do we focus on the ahava element? Let's proactively try and do a mitzvah. Or do we focus on the yira, which is, okay, it's nice to do mitzvahs, but I'd rather not do averus. And as you know, the religious Zionist community focuses more on the opportunity to engage with Shemitah and therefore looks for solutions that you can eat Shemitah produce appropriately, and the Haredi community looks for opportunities to avoid the problems of the Averas of Shemitah. Both of those are legitimate approaches. It's a question of balance. Imagine on Shabbat that you took the view that Shabbat is so complicated There's a possibility I could do so many things wrong. Just put me to sleep on Friday afternoon and wake me up on Motzei Shabbos, and then I'll never break Shabbos in my entire life. That's true. You'll never, ever, ever break Shabbos. But you'll never keep Shabbos either. You'll never get benefit from Shabbos. You'll never appreciate anything from what you'd miss. So too with Shemitah. I think some people take the view, just before Rosh Hashanah, just put me to sleep and wake me up when Shemitah's all over. And that way I won't do anything wrong. True. But you will, of course, miss out on potentially a positive and upside as well. Do we have a Geula-focused mentality? Rav Riman talks a lot about this. He's very excited by the Geula narrative that we talked about earlier in the year. And Shemitah, for him, is a taste of Geula coming. Or do we say, no, it's another issue in life that we need to deal with, but don't get excited about Geula. Do we focus on the cloud? Let's look at the needs of the community, the agriculture sector, the billions of dollars, the development of Israel? Or do we focus on the individual? When we start asking questions like, is it appropriate to divert our agriculture contracts to non-Jewish producers for these years? When that means that when Shemitah is over, it might not be so easy to get those contracts back. Or do we say, no, it's fine, we'll buy from Arabs, it doesn't make any difference. Everybody suddenly gets very principled during Shemitah year. All of a sudden people start saying, I'm not going to buy my fruit and vegetables from people in Gaza. That's not how... Okay, but did you ever ask that question in the middle of the Shemitah cycle? This year, last year, the year before? Did you ever ask where your cucumbers come from? People only ask that during Shemitah year, and they get all excited about it. We'll see the different perspectives on that. Do we feel that it's important to support Jewish producers, or does it make no difference in this situation? That's going to affect our Heta Mechira discussion as well. So there's lots of halakhic and hashkafic stuff here, which is why, of course, this is such a beautiful topic to discuss now and in this year. Okay, let's start, because so much for introductions, we have a lot to do. If we don't get everything done, it's fine. We will always pick it up in the next year, and please God. Let's start with looking at the Pesukim. So Shemitah is dealt with in three basic locations in the Chumash. First of all, in Parshas Mishpatim, in Shemot Perek Chav Gimel, it says as follows. V'sheishanim tizra et artzecha. Source number one. 6 years you must sow your land. Now you'll see, as I'm reading these psukim, the resonance, you'll remember Shabbat. Shabbat is also phrased in this way, and Rav Riman has a beautiful comparison between these, which we don't have time to get into. V'sheishanim tizra et artzecha, v'asafta et tvota. You will sow, and you will gather your produce. V'hashvi'it, the seventh year, tishmetena, you must release it. The Shoresh Shin Mem Tet is to release something. Unetashta, and leave it alone. You must release it and leave it alone. Va'achlu evyone yamecha, so that the poor can eat it. So first of all, you see here that Shemitah produce is meant to be eaten. It's meant to be eaten by the poor. But not just the poor, but evyone amecha, the poor of your people. We'll see that means with you as well. The yitram, and whatever's left over when they've taken what they need, tochal chayat hasadeh, it has to be available to the animals, of the wild animals, and we'll see that the concept of biur picks up on that as long as the animals can have it, you can have it, but once the animals can't have it, then you have to get rid of it. Kein ta'aseh l'charmcha, this is what you have to do for your vineyard, ulezeitecha, and also for your olive groves. Shesh yitramim ta'aseh ma'asecha, and so too with Shabbos, 6 days you must do your work, or v'yom ha'shvi'i tishbot, on the seventh day you must rest, l'man yinuch shorach v'chamorach v'yinafesh ben amatecha v'hager. So already in the Pesukim, Shabbos and Shemitah are juxtaposed. In Shemot, Lamed Daled, in Kisisa, there's a rather strange pasuk that looks to us right now to talk about Shabbos, but we'll see it doesn't necessarily. Number two, Sheish Shemim Ta'avod Ubiyom HaShvi Tishbot, 6 days you must work, and on the seventh day you must rest. B'charish Uvekatsir Tishbot, you must rest from plowing and reaping. And that's a little bit of a giveaway that this pasuk might not be talking about Shabbat as it seems to be talking about. Because if it was Shabbat, why would I suddenly focus on plowing and reaping? There's 100 other things that I would not be doing on Shabbat. So we'll see soon. Rabbi Akiva understands that this pasuk is talking about Shemitah. Either it starts with Shabbos and it goes on to Shemitah, or the whole thing is talking about Shemitah. And when it says Sheshet Yamim, it means years. not days, because the word yamim often means a longer period of time. If you remember back to when we discussed Torah evolution and the age of the universe, a yom is a flexible word. It doesn't just mean a day, it means a period of time. Okay, so that's the second situation. But the third and most detailed is in Vayikra, number three. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe b'har Sinai le'emor, beginning of Parshas Bahar. Dabrel b'nei Yisrael ve'amata aleihem, so say to the Jewish people, ki tavo el ha'aretz, when you come to the land. And I'm going to flag each of these phrases. That's going to be very important. Does Shemitah apply today when most Jews do not live in the land? Does it apply when the Yovel, Jubilee year, does not yet apply? And one of the questions that we'll have is whether the entire topic of Shemitah has actually now been downgraded to rabbinic rather than a Torah mitzvah. If that's the case, then our entire discussion will be different, and there's a major debate. What's that? It may change, okay, but the Yovel won't change soon. Because in order for the Yovel to apply, all of the Shvatim have to be on their ancestral lands. We'll see ancestral lands coming up soon. And even if, half a million American Jews make Aliyah and tip the balance into the majority of Jews in Israel, we still won't have Shevet Reuven, Gad, etc., and the 10 lost tribes. That we're going to have to wait for a while longer. So, Ki Tavo al Haaretz, Asher Ani Noten Lachem, which I'm giving you, V'shavta Haaretz, the land must rest. Shabbat LaHashem. And we'll have to ask ourselves the question, who's got the mitzvah here? Is it me? Do you and I have a mitzvah to rest somehow on Shemitah year? Or does the land have the mitzvah? The land is a player in this mitzvah in itself. Sheshanim tizrak sadecha. For 6 years you must sow your field, or you can sow your field, okay? V'sheshanim tizmor karmecha. And for 6 years you can prune your grapevine. Zemira, we'll see, is very specific to grapevines. V'asafta et tfuata. And you can gather in your produce. U'b'shana hashviyis, but in the 7th year, Shabbat Shabbaton yiyeh la'aretz. It's a Shabbat, a Shabbaton, a total rest for the land. Shabbat la'Hashem, it is a Shabbat for Hashem. Sadcha lo tizra, you may not, here's a mitzvah, you may not sow. V'charmcha lo tizmor, and you may not prune. Ve'et sefiach ketzircha, but whatever grows on its own, you haven't planted it, but it grows on its own. Lo tiksor, you may not harvest it. Ve'et inve nizirecha, and the grapes on your vines, on your wild vines, because you didn't prune them. Lo tivtor, you may not harvest those either. So now you're going to ask, well, 1 second. You just told me that the food is there for eating during Shemitah. So I can't eat it unless I harvest it. I'm not going to eat it while it's on the branches. So how does that work? It's obviously not quite the same as a general prohibition. Shnat Shabbaton yiyeh la'aretz. It'll be a complete year off for the land. Pasuk Vav. V'hayta Shabbos ha'aretz lachem la'achla. And in this Shabbos, all the land will be for you to eat. L'chao, l'avdacha, l'amatecha, for you and your male servants, your female servants, l'schircha, and your hired workers, l'tshavcha, and the people who hagarim emecha, the non-Jews who live in the land with you. U'levemtecha, for your animals, l'chayat asher ba'atecha, ba'atecha, and all the wild animals in the land, t'yechol, t'vuata, l'echol. So again, it's said many, many times, the produce is there to be eaten, to be eaten, to be eaten, by you, by your servants, by the animals, the wild animals, domestic animals, etc. And then in the ellipsis here comes all the psukim of Yovel, which I've not brought, but we'll look at another time. Be'ezrat Hashem. Va'asitim et chukotai, you will keep my laws. Va'esh mishpatai, tishmoiru, tishmoru. Va'asitim otam, you'll do all these rules. V'yishavtem al aretz v'vetach. And that will ensure that you are able to land, to live in the land with security. V'natna ha'aretz piriya, and the land will give of its fruit. V'achaltem l'sova, you will eat it to be satisfied. V'yishavtem l'vetach aleh, and you will live comfortably on it. V'chitomru, and if you were to say, ma nochal b'shana shvi, so what are we going to eat during Shemitah year? Hey, lo nizra, we never sowed anything. The wheat won't grow on its own. V'lo nesaf al tzvotein, we can't gather in our crops. What are we going to eat? V'tziviti es birkati lachem, I'm going to give you, says Hashem, a special brocha. B'shana hashishis, in the 6th year, v'asta tivua l'shlosh naim, because the 6th year will give enough food for the 6th and the 7th and the 8th until you're able to do the harvest at the end of the 8th. V'zartem et hashana hashmini, and by the 8th year when you come to harvest, v'achaltem in atfua yashan, you'll be eating until all the old produce, ad hashana hatishit, all the way to the 9th year, ad bo tzvata tochlu yashan. All until then, you'll be able to eat the produce. Don't worry, you'll have enough. There's a debate, is this talking about a regular Shemitah year, where you take off year 7, or is it talking about a Shemitah plus Yovel, where you take off year 49 and year 50, In which case there's 2 years of non-work. But whichever way you look at it, this is saying, giving as a bracha, that you'll have enough food. The haaretz lo timakel litzmitut, and you mustn't sell the land for eternity, perpetuity. Ki li haaretz, the land belongs to me, says God. Ki gerim v'tushavim atem imadi. You're just, you're here for a short time. You're here today, gone tomorrow. The land is here, is forever, and it is my land. And in all of your ancestral lands, there will be a redemption. This is talking about the Yovel, when the land returns to its original owner. So those are the psukim that deal with Shemitah. Each of these points we'll pick up. Finally, there is a warning in number 4 at the end in Perik Chaf Vav, where it says, Ve'etchem ezerab goyim, I will throw you out. 2, I will scatter you amongst the nations, vahari kosi achreihem charev, and the sword will be open and chasing you around the galut. Vahaita atachem shmama, and then your land will be barren. Vahareichem yu charva, and your cities will be abandoned. As tirtze haaretz es shaptoteh, and then the land will be able to rest. The rest that you didn't give it, because you didn't keep Shemitah, it'll get it then. Kol yemei hashama, all the days that it's desolate, va'atem ba'aretz oivechem, and you're living in exile, as tishpot ha'aretz v'hirtzat et shaptoseh. Then it will enjoy its rest. Kol yemei hashama, all the days of your exile, of destruction, of abandonment, tishpot, et asher lo shavta v'shaptotechem, b'shiftechem aleh. What you didn't keep when you were meant to keep, then you will have to keep because you won't be there. And kachaya, that is exactly what happened. I brought you in number 5. You can look at this on your own. At the very, very end of the whole Tanakh, the last psukim of the Tanakh, pretty much, it says, and that's how it happened, that the Jews were exiled to Babel for 70 years. And those 70 years, say the psukim, this is not Chazal, it's the psukim, made up for the 70 Shemitahs and Yovels that they did not keep properly during the first temple period. And Rashi does the whole calculation as to how that works. So you see that Shemitah was always a difficult mitzvah. Don't make out that, they used to do it and now it's hard. It was always very hard in many different ways. But that's a little overview of the psukim in the Torah. Now, let's have a look at the mitzvah specifically. We saw a few negative mitzvahs in there. Let's pick up those psukim again. Number 6. This is the pasuk from above, but it's focused in on these specific psukim. B'shana ha-shvi'it Shabbat Shabbaton yiyeh la'aretz, Shabbat la'Hashem, a Shabbos for the land, a Shabbos for God, sadcha lo tizra. Now what's zriya? Zriya is sowing seeds, is annual crops, crops that you have to seed every year, okay? If I could just ask people please to turn their phones off so that we don't get interrupted in the middle of the shir, or put them on mute please, be much appreciated, thank you. Sadcha lo tizra, you may not sow your land, your fields. V'charmecha lo tizmor, what's zmira? You say zmira works downstairs and runs the OU center, correct? But zmira means pruning a grapevine. So this negative mitzvah, you may not sow seeds, you may not prune the vines to make the fruit grow. V'esviach ketzircha, and what grows by itself. Lo tiksor, you may not do ketzira. Ketzira, again, is for an annual crop. Koitzer. V'et inven, izirecha lo tiftzor. Betzira is with grapes. Shnan shabbaton yiyeh la'aretz. And there you have 4 things. Zeria, zemira, which make the plants grow. Zeria is sowing, zemira is pruning. And don't forget, you prune a grapevine for a very specific reason. It's not just to keep the tree happy. It's to make the grapes grow. If you don't prune your vine, if you just take a pair of secateurs and massacre your vine at the end of the year, then you've messed up your crops for next year. Anyone who knows anything about grapevines will know you have to cut the new growth in a very specific way, leaving a couple of inches, a couple of little knots of the leaves that were before, in order for the grapes to grow next year. It's quite an accurate process. That's what zmira is. And therefore, like sowing, the pruning also makes the fruit grow. And katsira and batsira are the ingathering. Now, go over to page 3. They are the negative mitzvahs, but there's also a positive mitzvah. Daber b'nei Yisrael v'amarta aleim ki tavo al ha'aretz ha'shen ani nosen lachem v'shaft ha'aretz. And you see these words again, v'shaft ha'aretz shabbat la'Hashem, the land must rest positively. Then I put in bold here, shabbat shabbaton yiyeh la'aretz, shabbat la'Hashem, shnat shabbaton yiyeh la'aretz. And the first halachic question, therefore, is what is the interface between these two aspects, the negative and the positive? Is the positive mitzvah an independent mitzvah? There is an assay that we have to actually actively rest in some sense from on the Shemitah year? Or is this just the outcome, if you like, of not doing the negative acts. And who is there a mitzvah on? Is there a mitzvah on me to rest, or is it the land? Is the mitzvah on the land? For example, let me give you a parallel with Shabbat. The Ramban on Chumash says that just not only are there negative mitzvahs on Shabbat, you can't do this malacha, that malacha, 39 malachot, there is a positive mitzvah of Shabbaton. It's not good enough just to technically avoid the negative prohibitions. You also have to create a positive atmosphere of Shabbat. That's not just a fluffy hashgafic, oh, it's not Shabbastic. I know, certainly many of my students feel that when they're told something's not Shabbastic, it's just the way that the rabbi says to them, I don't want you to do it, but I can't explain why. Just, it's not Shabbastic. No, I mean, sometimes it could be that, but making Shabbat something actively special is actually a mitzvah. And therefore, in some ways, and this is an important point in Hilchos Shabbos, even the rabbinic prohibitions on Shabbos, of muksa, and for example, I can't turn on the land with the light with my right hand because I'm right-handed. But if I turn it on with my elbow or with my left hand, so then that is certainly with my elbow, that is a shinui. Okay, so that's only quotes and quotes drabonon. But if you break drabonons on Shabbos and thereby ruin the atmosphere on Shabbos, you are actually breaking or not keeping, if you like, the positive mitzvah of Shabbaton on Shabbos. That's why, technically, the rabbinic laws of Shabbos sometimes have greater chumrah than other rabbinic laws, what they call shvut. Shvut is a special category of rabbinic law which applies only on Shabbos, because those rabbinic laws are not just drabonons, but they make up a doraisa as well. That's why the normal rules of ein gezeira le gezeira, the rabbis never made a fence on their own fence, which is normally the case in halacha, don't apply in the same way in Shabbos, because shvut, in this sense, is not just a rabbinic law, it's to create this entire picture. And therefore, so too with the land. Is it a mitzvah specifically just not to do these things, or do we have to create a special atmosphere? And I brought you the Rambam. The Rambam in different places seems to focus in different ways. In Mishneh Torah, in number 8, he very much focuses on the individual. You can't do this. Don't do Zriah, don't do Betzira, etc. Whereas in Hilchos Shemitah, in the Hakdama, in number 10, he very much focuses on the land. Look in number 10 for a second. Hilchos Shemitah v'Yovel, Yesh Bichlalam Shtein v'Esrim Mitzvot. Shtein v'Esrim Mitzvot. There are 22 mitzvahs of the 613 involved in Shemitah. Teisha mitzvahs aseh, there are 9 independent mitzvahs aseh, the Shlosh Esrei mitzvahs lois aseh, and there are 13 negative mitzvahs. And what's the first one? The Zeu part, and I'm going to list them, he says. Aleph, Shetishpot Haaretz, Beshvit Mimelachta. The land has to rest. So he stresses in different places these different aspects, and Rav Kook understands, like we explained, that on the one hand we have a prohibition actively. If I sow a seed or plant a plant or prune a tree, I've broken something specific. But then beyond that, there is a positive mitzvah. And Rav Kook says, not on me alone or you alone, but on the whole of Klal Yisrael, to positively create a Shemitah atmosphere, which is interesting. Don't forget, Rav Kook understands that just as we all have individual neshamas, it's already a mystical idea, Klal Yisrael as a whole has a neshama, a mega neshama. And it's that neshama, if you like, which has the positive mitzvah of keeping Shemitah. That's the, if you like, that neshama is what's married to Shabbos. When Shabbos is married to the Jewish people, it's the global neshama of the Jewish people married to Shabbos. And therefore, Rav Kook says, if I get another Jew, if I assist another Jew to help them to break Shemitah, it's not just a regular lifnei iver. Oh, I helped another Jew do an avera. I gave another Jew pork and they ate it. It's actually not that. If I get another Jew to break Shemitah, I'm breaking Shemitah. I am contributing to Klal Yisrael, not keeping Shemitah. It's much more Klali. And therefore, look at the Ibn Ezra in number 11. The Ibn Ezra says, V'shavta ha'aretz Shabbos l'Hashem, mitzvah al Yisraeli, there's a mitzvah on the Jew, shelo yazov ger lizro ashnat ha'shmita Shabbos, to not allow the non-Jews to sow on Shabbos. Ka'asher lo na'azvo la'asod malacha b'Shabbos, just like we don't let them do malacha on Shabbos. Because they're under our control. So one second, asking a non-Jew on Shabbos to do something, everybody knows this. This is not as serious as a Jew doing it. It's a drabbanon. So what's he talking about? Exactly what we just said. That if you break the drabbanons, if you ask a non-Jew to do everything on Shemitah, and you think, oh, well, I avoided breaking Shemitah, it's only... No, you didn't actually. You may have avoided doing the malacha, but you didn't keep Shemitah, even on a Torah level. And that's why Rav Kook says, if you look at the bottom of the page, Afal pi she'ein lanu min ha-Torah b'shvid, ki im oisah ha-avod v'hashnim v'toldoseihem, we'll see what that means, that there are certain mitzvahs which are actions which are prohibited on a Torah level and others on a rabbinic level. Levad shar avodot she'mufura she'hem mid-derabbonon, we'll see that watering the gardens to Rabbanon and fertilizing the gardens to Rabbanon. Nevertheless, Mikol Makom, Klalos HaShemitah Hi Min HaTorah B'Kulam. The concept of Shemitah applies globally on a Torah level to all of them. V'ha'oida aleha b'chlal b'shnata shvi'it b'kvi'ut. If on a Kavua level, if on a global level I just do Rabbanon prohibitions on Shemitah, Avara Doraisa, I've broken the Torah mitzvah. And it's important to get that clear, and we'll see that there are these two aspects of Shemitah. I'll give you another example we'll see soon. If I plant a plant 5 minutes before Shabbos, I run out just before Shabbos comes in, dig a hole, plant a plant, cover it over, I didn't break anything on Shabbos. Absolutely nothing. But on Shemitah, you can't do that. Because if you plant a plant and it takes root during Shemitah, then on a certain level you've broken Shemitah as well. So Shabbos and Shemitah are not quite the same. You had a question? Yes, very much so. Shamor are the negative prohibitions, and Zohar is not just the technical mitzvahs, but to create this atmosphere. Now, having just mentioned this, let's talk briefly about Tosefet Shviit. I don't want to spend too long on this, because it's not the most important thing we need to talk about. But since today is the 12th, I think, of Av, Nachon, the 12th, which means that there are certain things, if you are about to plant a tree, I felt I couldn't leave this till next week, because there are things that you might have to do tomorrow or Friday. It's Tu B'Av on Shabbos. So Shabbos already is too late to start planting trees, but there might be things that you have to do on Thursday and Friday. Let's have a look at this very briefly. I won't spend too long on this. So Masechta Shviyah says as follows. He picks up this posik that sounded like it was about Shabbat. Number 13. Shneema, b'charisha b'katzir tishbot. You must rest from plowing and reaping. I don't need to learn a new posuk about Shviit here, because I know already from the other psukim about Shemitah, I'm not allowed to do these actions. So what is this teaching me? So the first view, which is Rabbi Akiva's view, Ela Charish shall Erev Shviit, but there is a prohibition of plowing on Erev Shviit, Shehu Nichnas to Shviit, which goes into Shviit. The Katzis shall Shviit, Shehu Yoytzel Amot to Shviit. And there's a problem of the end of Shemitah as well, of harvesting into the end of Shemitah, produce after Shemitah. Meaning there's what's called Tosefet Shviit. Shemitah is not just from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, but it starts a little bit before and it ends a little bit after. That's Rabbi Akiva's view. Rabbi Yishmael Amar, no, it's nothing to do with Shemitah. It's to do with Shabbos. Macharish Rishus, Avkatsir Rishus, Yatzakatsir HaOmer. This pasuk is not teaching me anything to do with Shemitah, according to Rabbi Yishmael. This pasuk is teaching me that I'm not allowed to break Shabbos for things which are optional, but where there's a mitzvah that requires me to harvest on Shabbat, the Korban Omer, when I need to bring the Korban Omer and I have to harvest on Shabbat, so I'm allowed to do that. It's nothing to do with Shemitah at all. Okay, fine. In the end, the Gemara concludes that everybody, even Rabbi Yishmael, agrees that there is a concept of Tosefet Shviit, before and after. But in number 14, it says Hilchata le Rabbi Yishmael, that Rabbi Yishmael learns it out as a halacha le Moshe Misinai. It's an oral tradition. The cry and the psukim for Rabbi Akiva, meaning in the end, everybody agrees with the halacha. The question is, do we learn it from this pasuk, or do we learn it from a halachic tradition from Sinai? Okay. There is a halacha, a Moshe Misinai, that you have to, or a posik, that you have to put at the beginning and the end. The Gemara, however, dismisses this at the end and says, I'm going to look just at the last line of number 15. Number 15, the Gemara debates this and concludes the last line, the penultimate line in the middle, Ki Gemiri Hilchasa, the conclusion is that when this oral tradition was given, Bizman Shebeis HaMikdash Kayam. This was only when there's a Beis HaMikdash. Dumya Denisach HaMayim, like pouring the water on Sukkot, only happens when there's a mikdash. Aval bizman she'ein beis hamikdash kayam, but when there's no beis hamikdash, lo. Okay, so in which case, why am I wasting your precious time in a shir talking about something that doesn't apply unless there's a beis hamikdash? We'll see, it's not quite that simple. The Rambam Paskins, number 16. Cholat varim ha'elu bizman hamikdash, k'moshe amarnu, all of these things, Tosefes, the beginning and the end, before and after, are all when there's a mikdash. Aval bizman hazeh mutarim ba'avodis ha'aretz ad Rosh Hashanah. You're allowed to do whatever you like these days, all the way till Rosh Hashanah. When they rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, Bimhei Revi Ameinu, we'll worry about this, what turns out to be a month before. However, still, things are not so straightforward. The Mishnah says, for example, number 17. Says the Mishnah, Ein noitin, the Ein mavrichin, the Ein markivin, you're not allowed to plant, or mavrich. Mavrich means that you're bikaim, or your knees, right? So mavrich means you bend down a branch of a tree, and you push it into the soil, and allow it to start a new shoot coming up. Or markivin, that's grafting, where you graft a branch from another tree into an existing tree. You can't do any of those things. Erev Shvi'it, on the year before Shvi'it, pachot mishloshim yom lifnei Rosh Hashanah. Within the month before Rosh Hashanah, you have to stop already doing this. Now, is it talking about now? Is it talking about when the Mikdash was there? We'll see. Ve'im nata, if you did plant in Elul, or Hivrich, or you did these other kinds of planting actions, or Hirkiv, ya'akor, you have to pull it out. You can't keep it. Rabbi Yehuda Omer says, no, it's not just that. Kol harkava she'enu koletet, it has to also have enough time to root, l'shloshet yamin, for at least 3 days, shuv enu koletet. If you don't leave something if it hasn't done it within 3 days, taken root in the land, then after 3 days it won't. It takes 3 days to do that. And Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon, Oimrim, l'shtei shabosos. No, it takes 14 days for something to take root. What's going on here? The Gemara says, okay, this is what's happening. There is still a concept, for some reason, we'll see why, of Tosefet Shvi'it. Even though the real Tosefet Shvi'it only applies when the temple was there. Nevertheless, there are two things we still have to worry about. One of them is, does the plant take root by the time Shemitah comes in? And therefore, according to some Rishonim, we have to make sure that we plant long enough before Shemitah that the plant actually takes root, like I said before, before Shemitah comes in. How long does that take? So for small plants, it would be 3 days. And for a tree, it would be 2 weeks. It would be 14 days. So there's one thing. That in theory, 14 days before Shemitah, you have to already make sure you've planted your trees or plants. Okay, but that's good. So what's the rush for this week then? That's the middle of Elul, or even later. So the Rambam finally gives us the bottom line, number 19. It says there's another problem you haven't thought of, he says. That's Orla. Orla? What's it got to do with Orla? So you know that for Orla, the first 3 years that you plant a new plant, you're not allowed to eat the fruit. If the fruit if it produces fruit in the first 3 years, most trees do not produce fruit in the first 3 years, so it's not generally a problem. Some do. Passion fruit's a whole question, and there are others that quickly produce. But Orla is 3 years. Says the Ramban, look in 19. Af bisman hazeh, even though he just told you that in theory, Tosefet Shvi'it only applies during the Mikdash, af bisman hazeh ein noitin ilanos, you can't plant trees, the ein markivin or graft, the ein mavrichin or bend them down into the ground, erev shvi'is elekedesh yitiklo tanatia, v'tisha acha klita shloshim yom kodim Rosh Hashanah. It has to have enough time to take root, plus 30 days. So it's either 3 plus 30 or 14 plus 30. Yeah? Why? So he says, "V'stam klita shtei shabbatot." For trees, certainly takes 14 days. V'davazeh osel oilam mipnei maris ha'ayin. It's a maris ha'ayin problem. It's actually got nothing to do with shmita. It's maris ha'ayin. What's maris ha'ayin? So here's the maris ha'ayin. If you plant a tree a week before Rosh Hashanah, so for Orla, that week doesn't count as the first year. So the first year, year one, is actually the shmita year. Year two is the next year. Year three is the next year. So somebody looks back, comes along 2 years later and sees and says, oh, let's count back. How many years has this tree been there? And they say, 1, 2, 3. Year one. Oh, year one was during Shemitah year. This guy planted this tree during Shemitah. How could that be? I take it out, rip it out. That's terrible. But he don't realize you planted it a week before. But no one's going to know that. So you have to give yourself enough time, says the Rambam, which is 1 month. That 1 month counts as year one for Orla. And then you can already start the Shemitah year as year two. So he says, what basically you have to therefore do is give yourself, number one, a month. And of course, Orla only relates to fruit trees. There's going to be no Orla if I plant an oak tree, because Orla is only for fruit. And there's going to be no Orla if I plant some plants and flowers. So you have to give yourself enough time that there is a month, plus however long the tree needs to take root. Then you can see, if you go over the page, in page 5, please, I've brought you a little chart as to how that works. And therefore, if you're going to plant a fruit tree with exposed roots so that it needs to take root, you better make sure to do it before Tu B'Av, which is this Friday. Okay, that's why I brought you this week. I was going to say, oh no, I'll deal with Tosefet Shvi'it next week. But then I thought to myself, they're not going to thank me if I say, well, you should have planted last week, but it's too late now. I'm really sorry to wait a year. So if you're intending to plant a tree with exposed roots, it has to be in the ground before Shemitah, before Tubav. Why? 2 weeks to take root and a month because of the orla problem. If, of course, as is generally the case, you plant a tree with a root ball, this is where always you have to start getting into the agriculture. When you go to the local nursery, you don't, it's called a nursery, right, where you buy the trees. They don't really usually give you a tree with dangling roots and say, I'll stick this in the ground and see what happens. They give you a whole tree with a root ball, so then already you're not worried about it taking root, so then you just have the month. Therefore, you've got till the end of Av, and I brought you some other examples there with non-fruit trees. It's less serious with vegetables, etc. We'll get to all of that as we do. If you're planting turf, you have to get it down as soon as possible, so get it all laid in and mowed, etc. But if you're intending to do any planting between now and Rosh Hashanah, so just take account of these restrictions and ask a shaila where necessary. Probably if you're buying from a nursery, it's not that dachuf for this week. You can manage until the end of Av. And there's also a bit of a patent. If you buy a tree from a nursery and just lay it on the ground, take it out of its pot and put it sitting on the ground, so it's already connected in the ground, that already counts, and then you can plant it any time during Elul. But again, ask a shaila. I don't want to get too technical here, but that's your planting. All other gardening activity can be done right up to Rosh Hashanah. Pruning and cutting and spraying and all of those things, there's not a problem with that. They say, some poskim, you should leave yourself a little bit of time to Sefet Shvi'id, but that's fine because Erev Rosh Hashanah, presumably you're running around getting ready for Chag, and you're not still planting your garden until 1 minute before Chag comes in, and therefore I'm sure you won't have a problem there. Fine. What's that?
I thought it was the
whole thing is Midrabanan. It's Maris Ayin. There's no Doraisa here. It's all Rabbanan. It's Maris Ayin, but it's a halachic restriction nonetheless. Fine. Let's get into the Shemitah itself. Yes, sir? Well, fruit trees, you've got the month issue because of Orla. With non-fruit trees, then if they're in a root ball, already you can put them in just all the way up to Rosh Hashanah. Because we're not worried about the month, and we're not worried about it taking root, because it's already in a root ball, and therefore you can be more relaxed if you're planting other trees all the way up to Rosh Hashanah. Now, let's have a look at the prohibitions of Shemitah. Excuse me? All the way up to Rosh Hashanah, that's fine. If they don't have a scent. If they have scent, then there may be a shayla, maybe they have to be in a little bit before. Then you have to ask a shayla chazan ishiz meikol rav kuk is machmi, you have to ask. But certainly you're not worried for this week, that's for sure. Okay, the Torah prohibitions. What did we say? We said there's a problem of Zriya, of Zemira, of Katsira and Batsira. Very important Gemara number 20. Says the Gemara, Michdi Zemira Bichlal Zriya. So if I already told you can't plant, why did I need to tell you you can't prune to help things grow? I know I can't make things grow. But Zemira is in some ways a subset of Zemira. Zemira is a subset of Zemira. Ubetzira, and also gathering your grapes, Bichlal Ksira is included in a more general concept. Why did it specify all of these different things in the pasuk? Lamai Hilchasa Ksivin Hu Rachmana. Why did the Torah write them? And here's a very important principle. Lameimre came to teach, Da'ahani told us, Michaev, only on these actions. These and these only you are obligated on a Torah level. Achrenisa, but on any other work on the ground or work on the garden, loy mechayev, you are not obligated. And what does this mean? In Hilchus Shabbos, we have Avot and Toladot. The Av Malacha of the 39 is the prototype that they did in the Mishkan. So, for example, Zuria, planting a plant or planting a seed, is what they did in the Mishkan. But then the Tolda on Shabbos, the tolda is any derivative action that has the same function. So watering the grass is a tolda of zuria. It's not actually planting, but it's promoting the growth of the plant. So too dash. Dash is threshing grain to get the seed out of the kernel. That's the av malacha on Shabbat. The tolda is squeezing a grape to get the juice out of the grape. Now, on Shabbat, both the Avot and the Toladot are all Doraisa. They're all prohibited on the Torah level. Just like I can't plant a tree on Shabbos, I can't water the grass on Shabbos, on the same level. Just like I can't thresh grain, I can't squeeze grapes. Also, squeezing lemons and oranges is a bit different, not getting into that now. But in Hilchus Shemitah, the most important thing you learn here is on a Torah level, there are these four only. And everything else is rabbinic. That's very different from Shabbat. Therefore, watering your ground and spraying and hoeing and weeding and all of these things. On Shemitah, on Shabbos, they might be a Doraisa, but on Shemitah they won't be. They'll be the Rabbanon, and we'll see that makes a very big difference. And therefore, let's look at some of these quite quickly, and then we can zip through. We have still a bit more time. So let's just briefly discuss what these malachas are, and that'll give us the foundations. So Zriah, let's talk about the land first and then the produce. Zriah means planting seeds. Most poskim say that any planting of plants is also a Torah prohibition, just like seeds, although there is a discussion about that. And any fruit tree, certainly a fruit tree, which is planted in a prohibited manner during Shemitah, has to be uprooted. Possibly other trees as well, has to be uprooted even after Shemitah. Now, today, in today's world, it's quite common if you're in agriculture that most farmers don't go around planting trees like one by one or planting seeds one by one. They have machines. So in an automated system, is this still a problem? So the poskim say, yes, if I drive a tractor, then that's just me doing it using a tractor. Okay, fine, so that's the same. But what if I have a whole pre-programmed system? What if I set all my machinery before Shemitah, like on some mega sort of time switch that they can do, pre-programmed all in, and then everything just does itself during Shemitah? Now, on Shabbos, that would be fantastic. You know, I can preset everything, even though Rav Moshe Feinstein said he doesn't like Shabbos clocks. He feels that if Chazal would have known about them, they would have said they're prohibited. But, you know, what can you do? Everybody uses them. Chazal didn't prohibit them. But on Shemitah, it's not so straightforward for the reasons we said before. On Shabbos, the focus is very action-focused. On Shemitah, the issue is much more result-focused. And therefore, even though something is a grummer, you know, on Shabbos we have all these grummer this and grummer that and grummer microphones and grummer, you know, little buggies that people ride around with a sign on saying this is a Shabbos friendly, you know. That's fine for Shabbos. But on Shemitah it might not help. Because if at the end of the day you succeeded in sowing your land and making the whole land work, so what did you achieve? Because it's not just a mitzvah on you and me, it's a mitzvah on the land itself. So grammar is not so straightforward. And therefore even automated systems are more complicated than one might think. Okay, that's sown. Zmir, what is pruning? So I said here, pruning is related to grapevines. There's a significant debate about whether this applies to other trees. Like I said before, when you prune other trees, it's usually to help the tree, not to help the fruit. And therefore, there are many poskim that say that it's really grapevines that is the key. Other trees may be rabbinic. Other people say, no, it's on a Torah level. Even on a grapevine, Rav Cook says, if you prune it in the wrong way, then that might not be Zmira, because Zmira is there to promote the fruit. Certainly, if you have a gardener just shaping the trees to stop them, you know, growing out of control, and just that's not a problem in the same way of Shemitah at all, because then you're not pruning in any way to help the tree or to help the fruit or anything. You're basically just keeping it in a tidy shape. I'm not going to go into plowing now as to what the exact details of that. Certainly, if you're doing work on the ground for building purposes, that's fine. There's no reason why you can't dig a foundation, but I'm bringing a tractor in and I'm digging up the land. Fine, as long as it is clear to the onlooker that what's happening here is construction as opposed to gardening, then that's fine. Somebody, I was in a shir recently, somebody asked, what about laying astroturf during Shemitah? Yeah, false grass. Sometimes it looks nicer than the real grass, quite frankly. Certainly cheaper to maintain. Can you do that? And the answer is, of course you can do that. There's no problem there. You're not planting anything. There just has to be no Maris Ayin. It has to be very clear from you know, an onlooker that what's going on here is just putting in false turf rather than real turf. Fine. So that's the land-oriented. But what about the produce? What did we say before? You're not allowed to reap and gather, but I'm allowed to eat it. So how do I eat it if I don't gather? So look here. Number 21 and 22 says the pasuk, you have to be able to eat the produce. Fine. Says the sifra number 22, you may not gather in your grapes min hashamur. It's very important points here. You can't gather from something which has been guarded. Meaning, I put a fence around my garden, and it's my crops, and I'm having them. And they belong to me, not to you. You can't do that. Okay? Mina shamur ba'aretz ein atabotzer, aval atabotzer mina mufka. But you are allowed to gather from something which is hefka. Meaning, betzira doesn't just mean you can't gather them. You can gather them because you're allowed to eat them. You can't gather them as an owner. You can't establish ownership over them. These are my grapes. This is my fruit, and I'm having it for myself. The rest of the time you can do that. It belongs to you, but not during Shemitah. It has to be hefka. Lotiv tzor, when it says you can't bring in the grapes, also lotiv tzor kederech habotzrim. You can't do it in the normal way, the way an owner would bring in their fruit. You have to do it in a way which is different. And there's a whole debate in the Rishonim. What does that mean? Does that mean I have to actually declare my land hefka? The Torah said already it's hefka. You have to release it. So is it good enough that God declared it hefka? Or do I have to stand up before Shemitah and say, my land is hefka? So most poskim say you don't have to say anything, but many people put a sign up. And the sign is not just a, you know, nice neighborliness saying my fruit trees are hefka. It's actually fulfilling this idea that I am declaring through this sign that when I gather for myself, which I'm allowed to, it's not because I own it, it's because I own it and you know it and we all own it. And therefore, when you're gathering, you can't gather as an owner. And also, other poskim say that you have to also gather in a different way, maybe take it with a shinui, where you'd normally use sekatoras, you maybe use scissors, or in a different way than you normally do. Also, the shinui has to be very much result-oriented. It's not just that I did it with my left hand, now I can't see the difference. It has to look, someone looks at this plant and says, oh yes, this is not a professional gathering, this is someone who's hacked off the fruit, and that's fine. Yes.
That in Shemitah, when you're walking along the pavement and there's fruit hanging over from somebody's private garden, you can just...
We'll talk about that. And whether you can even go into the garden with or without their permission, we'll talk about exactly who that fruit belongs to. And when we get there, we will, Be'ezrat Hashem, deal with that. In practice, what the poskim say is that if you have fruit trees on Shemitah year, you're allowed to eat the fruit from them. And by the way, it's not obligated in Trumas and Maestros. You do not have to take Trumas and Maestros from that fruit because that fruit is hefka. You should really declare it hefka by putting a sign up. We'll talk about who can eat it and when they can come in without permission. But you can't take more than you need. What does that mean? A small amount for the family for a few days is what the post can say. But you can't reap the crop, if you like. Everybody is allowed, the person who lives in the house no less than everyone else, everyone is allowed to pick a small amount. I once heard a wonderful shiur from Rav Menachem Liebtag, and he talks about the purpose of Shemitah. In Shemitah year, we have this whole year where we're not eating and gathering our crops as owners, but we're taking a little bit, just what we need, no more and no less. And we have a whole year of living like this, of just taking what we need rather than having ownership over it. And what happens at the end of the Shemitah year? Hakel. At the end of the Shemitah year, on Sukkot of the Shemitah year, the king reads the Torah, everybody gathers together, and it's a whole renewal of the Brit. So Rav Liebtag explains that this, we are recreating the process of Matan Torah. That in the lead up to Matan Torah, everybody had from the man, everybody ate from the man, and if you remember how much they collected, a small amount for each person, just for a day or two, whatever, just for a day, and if you try to collect more, then you can't. Because you're not the owner of this, you're just getting what you can. And then at the end of that, you get to Matan Torah. So he says the Shemitah to Hakel cycle reflects the man leading up to the Matan Torah cycle. But you can think about that separately. Okay, so that's the issue of Betzira. You are allowed to gather things in, but only with a shinui and only in a way which is a small amount at a time. Rabbinically, as I mentioned, all of the other agricultural activities that you do during Shemitah are not Torah prohibitions, but rabbinic. And I listed here the 22 classics. Rav Rimon goes through all of them in his book with beautiful technicolored pictures. What is hoeing and removing leaves and applying dust and fumigating and this and that. You can look at those later because I'm not expert enough to explain what they all are. And there are many different opinions on some of them. The one which is most important for us is watering. Because obviously if you don't water your plants for a year, even for a week, they will not survive in Israel. In England, they'll survive, don't worry, it'll be fine, okay? But in Israel, they won't survive. So why are you allowed to water the plants? You know, the fruit is growing because you're watering them. How is that okay? Oh, but it's only drabbanon. Okay, but it's drabbanon. You're not allowed to do it. Yes, the four classics are Torah and the others are rabbinic. So the Gemara comes in here, the Mishnah, actually, number 23, and says, Mashkim betashlachim, if you have a field which is a betashlachim. Betashlachim means it needs human intervention to water it. It won't just survive on its own from rainfall. If you have a field or a plant like that, b'moed, you're allowed to water it on Chol HaMoed, u'b'shvi'it, and also during Shemitah. From this, the rabbis learned that any one of these rabbinic activities is prohibited, but if you need to do it in order to preserve the plant, you're allowed to do it. So you're allowed to water during Shemitah, not to enhance the growth or to improve the fruit, but to keep the plant alive. Why? Why is this okay? So some poskim understand it's a straightforward drabbanon with a hefsid. There's a serious hefsed merubah, excuse me. There's a serious loss. I'm going to lose my trees, and it's a drabanon anyway. So normally speaking, I'm allowed to break, or in many cases, a rabbinic prohibition when there's going to be a significant loss. Okay, so maybe that's the system. Others say no. The Ritva says no. It's completely shmita oriented. If you're watering or working the land in any way which is rabbinically prohibited in order to keep the tree alive, that's not called working the land for Shemitah. Working the land for Shemitah is for growth, is to produce the crops. If you're just doing it to keep things alive, then that's not called working. And there are various nafkaminas I brought you in the footnotes between these two reasons. Do I have to try and do it before Shemitah? Do I have to try and do it with a shinoi? Do I have to do this? Do I have to do that? But bottom line, all agree that you are allowed to do a gardening activity as is necessary to preserve the tree. Now, there is a debate, by the way, as to are you allowed to even do what is necessary to preserve the crop? Let's say someone comes along and says, you've got a problem with your crop. If you don't do stuff, your whole crop's going to die. So you have to do this, not to enhance the crop, but to even have a crop. So the Chazon Ish, by the way, who is usually more lenient, not always, but usually more lenient on issues of Shemitah, and Rav Kook is usually stricter. You're going to ask me, well, isn't Rav Kook the one that supported the Heta Mechira? And the answer is, yes, because Rav Kook needed the Heta Mechira, because he is much stricter on the individual actions on the land, and therefore the only way you're going to be able to do anything is with the Heta Mechira. Whereas the Chazon Ish, who on a case-by-case basis is usually much more lenient, said, well, you don't need the Heta Mechira. You can do this, and you can do that, and you can do this, and you can do that, etc. So we'll see how that was to go through. But Rav Kook actually says nothing to keep the crop, but the Chazon Ish says you're allowed to do whatever is needed to preserve the crop as well. In practice, for farmers, where there's going to be significant loss, they can rely on the Chazon Ish. But for gardeners, we'll talk about this in practice. What we do is we do what is necessary. I've got a little garden in front of my house, behind my house. We do what is necessary to keep the plants alive. We're not worried about the crops, because what's the big deal? So you'll lose your pomegranates this year. You're not a farmer. You're not selling them. And therefore, in practice, you have to think. We'll see. Do I have to get just the right amount of water? Do I have to look every day and see when the plants begin to kind of go like this? I can run out and put a bit more on. What happens if I just, it's all automated, and I just turn on the tap, and it does it all itself? So we'll see all of those issues. Okay, the last thing I want to look at today is just very briefly, and we can do this in a few minutes, and we'll pick on this some more. What are the core principles of Kedusha Shviat? Okay, we've looked at Malachas, we've looked at working the land, we've looked at the Daraisas and the Drabonans, to Sefer Shviat. So Chazal understood, if you look in number 24, it says in the passage, Ki yovel hi, it's a yovel year, kodesh ki yelechem, it is kodesh for you. Minasadeh tochlu et tvuata, you'll eat the food because it's kodesh. So the rabbis in the Gemara in Talmud Yerushalmi say number 25, Ksiv, it says in the passage, Ki yovel hi kodesh ki yelechem, ma hi kodesh, af tvuata kodesh. Just like the yovel year, the Shemitah year is kodesh, so the produce is Kodesh. It has Kedushat Shviat, which I have abbreviated all through the sheet and in future sheets, to K7. If you want to know what K7 means, it's not a vitamin supplement, okay? It's Kedushat Shviat. And therefore, Kedusha Shviat applies to, we'll see what it applies to in a minute, to many, many kinds of produce during Shemitah year. Now, the Ramban is understood by many Meforshim, we'll look at this more in a future class, please God, to understand that it's a mitzvah to eat it. Not just that it has Kedusha, but there's actually a mitzvah to eat produce which has Kedusha Shviat. And we'll see there are all sorts of restrictions on what you can do with it. Rav Kook even went so far as to suggest that you can do, or should do, Netilat Yadayim before you eat any Kiddush Shvi'as produce. Not just bread, but fruits and vegetables or any of them. Now, we don't paskin that way, but at least it shows you the level of seriousness with which the poskim take this. So there are four basic issues. Let's start talking about them now, and we'll finish talking about them in future Shirim. You have to ask four questions. Number one, what kind of produce is it? Only produce which is edible by humans or animal food has Kiddush Shvi'as. The branches of your trees for schach don't have Kiddush Shvi'as. But things which are edible, basically, or even used for human uses, could be for makeup, it could be for oils, have Kiddush Shvi'as. According to many poskim, this applies to scent-bearing flowers too. Many people during Shemitah year are careful to only buy flowers from a flower shop with a hechsher, that you know where they came from. Otherwise, the flowers may have Kiddush Shvi'as if they have a scent. And if they do, that gets you into some issues, because then the money that you just used to pay for the flowers could have Kiddush Shvi'as as well. More about that another time. That's one question. When did it grow? Only produce that grows during the Shemitah year has Kiddush Shvi'as, but it doesn't go by the canon. Just look at the last page for a second, page 9. Depending on what kind of vegetable or fruit it is, you will decide whether it's a Shemitah year fruit or not. Vegetables go by when they were picked. The picking determines the Shemitah status. So vegetables picked before Rosh Hashanah are not Shemitah, during the Shemitah year are. For olives and grapes and grains, it depends when they grew a third. So if they were a third grown already before Shemitah, then they're from before Shemitah. But during Shemitah, they're Shemitah. Fruit, which is a big issue for most of us, it depends on what's called the chanata. When did the baby fruit begin to form on the tree? And therefore, all the fruit on the trees now, the grapes and the pomegranates and the figs and all of that, they are not Kedusha Shvi'as and will never be Kedusha Shvi'as. And when the Shemitah year comes, you can treat those trees normally and for the fruit, and you can pick them and you can do anything in a completely normal manner, because that fruit is not Kedusha Shvi'as. This time next year, the fruit that you're going to pick in the year after Shemitah, that's the fruit that has Kiddush Shvi'as. And with flowers, we talked about a little bit as well, there's going to be issues. And the last two questions, which we'll talk much more about later, are number 3, where did it grow? I need to know where this grew. Obviously, if it's from Chutz La'aretz, no problems. But which bit of Israel did it grow in? That will determine whether it does have Kedusha status or doesn't. And who owned the land on which it grew? This is going to be, and we'll see this next week, is a very important question. If a non-Jewish person owns land in Israel and produces fruit and produce in Israel, does that or does that not have Kedusha Shvi'as? And that's going to be the entire, well, not the entire, but one of the foundational questions for the Hetz Mechira. Because if you say that even if an Arab grows fruit produce in this country, then it has Kedusha Shvi'as, so then what did it help you to sell the land to an Arab? Didn't help at all. The whole Hetz Mechira doesn't even start. But if you hold, we'll see, like the majority poskim, that if a non-Jew owns land and produces fruit that does not have Kedusha Shvi'as, then you already have the beginning of a conversation. So we've covered a lot today. We actually covered everything, which is amazing. It's quite complex, but I put a lot of English on the sheets. So please take it away and read it. If you want to read Rabbi Rimon's book, then you'll be even better off. Next week, the history and the development of the Hetz Mechira of Ezrat Hashem.